Hello, you're listening to Bite-Sized Medicine, a podcast where the episodes are bite-sized in length and the medicine is about food. My name is Kelsey.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Katie. We are medical and dietetic students from The Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. Our goal is to make evidence-based nutrition counseling easier for busy healthcare providers and students. These discussions are our own and are not endorsed by any organization or university, and they are not intended to be used in place of medical advice.
Let's get started.
Intermittent fasting has become a fad diet. Clinically, this makes it important to understand what the evidence actually shows in order to counsel patients or even family and friends.
First, the term intermittent fasting is actually a broad umbrella that includes all forms of voluntarily limiting food intake. Examples include alternate day fasting, modified fasting, time-restricted feeding, and religious fasts. Let's start by covering alternate day fasting and modified fasting regimens.
Alternate day fasting means that days with little to no caloric intake alternate with days of unlimited intake.
There are a few studies on the effects of this regimen, and they showed a modest reduction in weight short term. There are mixed results on the effect on glucoregulatory and lipid levels.
Importantly, there was significant self-reported hunger on fasting days that did not decrease over time, making the diet less ideal as a long-term solution, which should be the ultimate goal.
One specific large randomized control trial by Trepanowski et al. Compared alternate days fasting with daily calorie restriction for 1 year. Just to clarify, daily or generally restrictive diets in these studies are defined as about 75% of a person's typical intake, while fasting is usually less than 25%. The alternate day fasting diet had the highest dropout rate and resulted in similar weight loss compared to daily restriction at both 6 and 12 months. There were also no differences in serum markers of risk for cardiovascular disease.
Moving on to modified fasting regimens, this is when a person schedules certain days of the week to limit intake. A common method is to fast on two consecutive days, followed by unrestricted intake on the remaining 5 days each week.
Studies have been done on both mice and humans, both of which demonstrate weight loss and mixed effects on metabolic markers, again, similar to the effects of daily restrictive diets.
So far, there has been limited research on the two fasting regimens we've discussed, but both seem similar to generally restrictive diets in terms of weight loss and metabolic effects. The major downside is a possible increase in hunger and poor adherence during the fasting days that is not necessarily seen with daily restriction.
Now we come to the final method of intermittent fasting, time-restricted feeding, which proposes a bit of a different approach.
That's right. Time-restricted feeding limits the hours of intake each day, rather than specifically limiting caloric intake.
So, I think it's interesting to explore the proposed reasoning behind the strategy. Essentially, it begins with understanding that animals have developed to maximize their daily performance by increasing metabolism in alignment with food intake and energy expenditure each day, while conserving energy during fasting and resting periods. This development is controlled by circadian rhythms that coordinate the changes in metabolic requirements during different periods of the day.
Yes, and of course we all remember the central rhythm generator in the suprachiasmatic nucleus, which is controlled by light and dark exposure. But there are also peripheral circadian rhythms in the liver, intestines, and adipose tissue, which are primarily influenced by food intake and activity level.
Together, these rhythms control cyclic expression of enzymes and pathways involved in metabolism, alter hormone levels that motivate feeding behaviors and metabolism, and stimulate autonomic digestive and blood flow patterns of peripheral organs. For example, during the day, humans demonstrate increased gut blood flow and gastric emptying, as well as faster reactions to glucose load compared to nighttime.
In addition, consider shift workers who have been shown to be at increased risk of cardiovascular disease, obesity, diabetes, and also have increased levels of hunger-producing hormones such as ghrelin and leptin. Other studies that have shown that eating more food earlier in the day is associated with lower weight and improved health. All of these point to the idea that food intake is handled differently by the body during different times of day.
This is all very interesting, but now let's tie it back to time-restrictive feeding. With this physiology in mind, time-restricted feeding proposes that there are health benefits to restricting caloric intake to daytime hours. This makes sense so far theoretically, but what does research tell us about how it plays out?
Overall, it has been found that time-restricted feeding regimens improve metabolic factors such as lipid levels, glucose, insulin, and inflammatory mediators regardless of weight loss. The limitation is that most of the studies at this time have been on mice. One summary article noted that there have been two human studies and results do seem consistent with results of mice studies so far.
So digging a bit deeper, one large study by Chakes et al. Randomized mice into groups fed a high-fat diet for 9, 12, or 15 hours per day. It showed incrementally less weight gain as the feeding time decreased, with no benefit to the 15-hour feeding restriction, while the total number of calories consumed was actually the same for all groups.
Interestingly, the study later allowed the mice to eat freely for 2 days each week to resemble weekends for humans. The results demonstrated a legacy effect in which mice continued to be protected from weight gain.
This and other studies go on to show multiple benefits such as improvements in serum cholesterol and lipids, adipocyte size and related inflammation, insulin resistance, and glucose and protein metabolism.
After reading these studies, there were a couple important points to highlight. First, the protection from obesity was demonstrated when feeding was limited to 12 hours per day or less, but not in the 15-hour feeding group. And second, most of the study conclusions were focused on protection from weight gain and metabolic derangements in normal weight mice when consuming a high-fat or high-sugar diet. This means that weight gain still occurred, or there was no significant weight change. The exception was one study that found evidence of reversal of diet-induced obesity and metabolic derangement, which is promising.
Along a similar line, we did not find any studies comparing time-restricted feeding to other healthy dietary changes or the effects of time-restricted feeding in the context of healthy diet consumption. Again, the focus was on changing the time of feeding without changing the foods that were being consumed.
So what does this mean clinically?
Well, first, studies are clearly limited on this topic, especially human studies and data connecting intermittent fasting to clinical outcomes such as diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and cancer risk. This makes it difficult to make any strong recommendations at this time. Still, we also recognize that there has been little evidence of harm physically or in terms of mood in healthy, normal weight, overweight, or obese individuals, which is reassuring.
In terms of clinical interpretation, overall, these studies suggest that limiting food intake to less than 12 hours per day may help protect patients from increased weight gain and metabolic syndrome, especially when changing the actual dietary components is a major obstacle for the patient.
One final comment that I want to emphasize is the importance of breakfast. Although there have been a few studies that have not shown any benefit to eating breakfast, there is quite an abundance of studies that do support its benefits. To list a few, it has been shown that skipping breakfast is associated with increased rates of obesity, even when energy intake is the same or less than people who eat breakfast. In addition, eating breakfast is associated with increased insulin response and lower serum total and LDL cholesterol levels. I bring this up because time-restricted feeding suggests limiting the hours of intake, and we feel it is important that these hours include breakfast. In addition, the time-restricted feeding studies have specified that consumption should be during the daytime, but for people that choose to restrict to shorter hours each day, I worry that it is tempting to skip breakfast and choose later hours in the day to eat. Full disclosure, this is a conclusion that has not been studied specifically, only something we have agreed upon on our own based on the studies described. It seems most reasonable to us that the maximum benefit of a time-restricted feeding diet would be to start with breakfast and restrict eating later in the day.
Thanks for sticking with us. Let's summarize the main points for today.
Intermittent fasting is a broad name for feeding patterns in which caloric intake is voluntarily withheld. Alternate day fasting and modified fasting regimens both include days of fasting mixed with days of unlimited intake and do not have research support in terms of adherence or health benefits at this time. Time-restricted feeding makes biological and intuitive sense by preferentially eating when the body's metabolism is designed to handle it most efficiently, which is during the day. There is insufficient data at this time to make strong clinical recommendations, but if a patient is interested, be sure to educate that evidence at this time supports 12 hours of intake per day, and the intake should take place during the daytime, preferably with breakfast included.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to check out the episode notes for more information, including our references and additional resources. We'd like to acknowledge the professors and lecturers on these topics at The Ohio State University College of Medicine and our media and technical specialist, Phil Wachowiak. That's today's taste of bite-sized medicine.